lunging up and confronting Doc once more. Bending upright as best he could at the waist with Doc's weight on top of him, Chan looked him in the face.
You tried to kill me!
No, I did not! I just tried to render you unconscious. If I wanted you dead, you would be shot, you idiot! Get it through your mind, son! I am a desperate man!
Chan lowered himself back on his elbows, sighed, and then sprang up a second time, managing to lean forward even farther and whack his foe bluntly in the nose with his forehead.
Shit, Doc!
A trickle of blood poured from his mouth where the older man's desperate blow had loosened two of his teeth.
I do believe I've broken one of my fingers.
Doc flexed his hand, even as he prepared to swing another punch with his left. Finally, to Doc's relief, the man was unconscious. Doc's hands were singing a duet of pain as he sat at the computer, activating the operating software that was linked with the time trawl hardware.
Warning! Intruder alert within the matter transfer control room.
Doc knew the pair of scientists couldn't have returned from their break so soon, and Alan's unconscious body was hopefully still slumbering in Doc's bed, the covers pulled up high. So what had tipped them off? Doc looked up, craning his long neck and pointing his chin skyward, and saw the security camera staring down at him, a small red activation light winking on and off. At some point during his fight with Chan, the overhead video camera had seen the struggle. Doc supposed he should be glad for his keepers and their lack of subtlety. If they hadn't hit the alarm, he wouldn't have heard them coming in time to try to make a stand. He picked up the chair he'd been sitting in and ran over to the control keypad for the vanadium steel security door to the room, swinging up the solid metal legs in a sideways arc and smashing the plastic casing. The liquid crystal display went blank, and there was a smattering of white sparks from the inside wiring of the number keys. Having retrieved the Glock, Doc fired a series of bullets into the door's mechanism as well. Rolling the chair to the computer, he sat back down and began to type even faster, hoping in his haste he wouldn't make a mistake. Recalling the commands from his scholar's trained memory, which had observed, organized, and stored the information away during previous stints watching and learning in the Matrans rooms, he was able to bring up the proper entry screen for the time trawl settings on the computer monitor. Sweating now from the exertion and nerves and the double layer of clothing he wore, his brow glistening with perspiration, Doc typed in the destination date as that November day of 1896, along with the exact moment the Eye of God appeared in the sky before his daughter. While Doc might not have been certain of the precise second, all of the essential information regarding his trawl was already stored in the computer's databanks, and as such he was able to time his planned re-entry as best he could to the very instant he was first sucked away. In essence, he was attempting to superimpose himself upon the scene. The date in place, Doc closed down the time trawl databanks, retaining the translation code the computer had offered that he would need to program by hand for his destination when he entered the gateway site itself. The code was more complex than the ones he'd seen for using the gateways to travel from one location to another. He imagined that extending the process to include the opening up of a temporal doorway accounted for the extra series of numerals.
Tanner, this is Wells. Halt what you are doing immediately, and open the control room door, or there will be terminal repercussions. If we have to blast our way inside, we might damage the gateway controls. And if that happens, you won't ever be able to go back.
Lies. All lies.
Doc raced into the anteroom between the armaglass gateway and the control room, stripping off the security uniform. He held the pistol he'd taken from Alan out from his body for a second, pondering whether to take it along or not, and finally thrust it down into the front of his trousers and belt, hoping the weapon's safety would stay in place, and he wouldn't be blowing off the Tanner family jewels. Pausing before the gateway keypad, Doc tapped in the needed code, bringing it up from where he'd stored it in his short-term memory, and taking grim confidence in knowing he'd remembered the sequence perfectly. The small display on the control pad of the gateway blinked twice after he thumbed the enter key and began counting down. Doc looked away, knowing time was short, and lifted the rubber and metal handle of the heavy armaglass gate to the six-sided chamber. The door swung open easily, and he stepped inside, pulling it closed behind him. The curtain of mists fell down, like water through a drain, swirling, twirling, growing thicker and whiter, obliterating all sight and sound. There was a queer sensation of being pressed upon with a giant hand, and his ears popped as if he made the transition from a higher to a lower altitude. Doc tried to speak, but couldn't. The last thing he remembered before falling into unconsciousness was how the metal plates on the floor of the chamber felt hot against his cheek, while the other side of his face was as cold as freshly fallen snow. Doc awoke to find he was inside another chamber. The code had proved wrong. He hadn't gone back in time, but instead had been shuttled down the line to another one of the multitude of gateways that dotted the United States as part of the project.
Shit!
Doc's current state of mind could be easily guessed by the usage of the vulgarity. The curse was one of the few he rarely, if ever, used, but none other seemed to sum up his situation quite so well.
Shit! Shit! Shit!
Then he realized the color of the walls were exactly the same shade as the ones he'd just departed. Yet he'd been told no two gateways were alike, and all had different colors of armaglass. Rather than number them, one of the design engineers had hit upon using colors as a security measure. If someone transported into a chamber and didn't know the location from the color, the jump would be quickly recognized as unauthorized. Doc realized he hadn't even left. He was still on the floor where he'd started from, and the stolen pistol was cutting into his stomach something fierce. The door of the hexagonal chamber swung open, and there stood a squad of the security men, a frowning Allen among them, and an equally frowning Wells next to him.
Dr. Tanner, consider yourself under arrest.
100 retorts went through Tanner's mind, ranging from on what grounds to I would rather be under arrest than under attack, but he used none of these.
Shit.
You're finished, Tanner.
Nonsense. I barely got started before ending up back here in your charming company.
We rerouted your signal. Chan was able to stagger up and do a bounce back on the chronal nav guidance computer. You went one way, hit a wall, came screeching back. Do not pass go, do not collect $200.
So, my computation and calculations were correct.
Yes, still, you couldn't wait, could you? We trust you and this is the result. I ought to have you shot where you stand.
You wouldn't dare. I am too important to your little project.
For now, Tanner. For now.
Why here?
Mildred was taking in the tropical breeze from the open balcony and enjoying the feel of the air on her bare shoulders and neck. She was dressed in a midnight blue summer dress with white collar and trim, a scavenged piece of attire Jamais Vu had obtained for her from one of the boutiques still intact in Old San Juan. She had refused the gift at first, but then decided she was being silly, and why not spend a day feeling feminine? She was surprised to find Jamais Vu alone. Doc was nowhere in sight. She turned to face Jamais Vu before asking her question a second time.
Why here?
Why not?
It's rude to answer a question with a question.
Then I will attempt a compliment. You look most beautiful, Dr. Wyeth. Even though Mildred knew she was being hosed, she returned his smile. Her own lover rarely tossed out such commonplace courtesies and compliments. Manners, like so many other social niceties, had gone the way of the new cost. While the woman knew she would never have been confused with Emily Post, by the very nature of her former positions as researcher, physician, and Olympic medalist, she knew her way around a cocktail party or formal dinner. Then there were occasions she missed getting dressed up for a night of entertainment, as opposed to trekking through a world that was not only consistently crude and inelegant, but also held an inexhaustible stock of nasty surprises for them. Dressing up and dining out. Too bad the man sitting across from her wasn't J.B. Not that the armorer would have been enjoying himself. For all of his talents, he wasn't a man for casual finery or amusement. To a woman who had once lived in the late span of the 20th century, the armorer could seem almost supernaturally cool and dispassionate. Still, Mildred mused, while J.B. was predictable, he was usually predictable in all the right ways. Jamais Vu, on the other hand, was still an unknown commodity. Charming, handsome, silver-tongued, and, like herself, intelligent, he seemed to be more the type a woman like herself should be attracted to. So why didn't Mildred trust him? Jamais Vu snapped Mildred out of her reverie. I said, would you like some more wine? He held up the bottle from the silver ice bucket and presented it to her. Mildred held out her empty glass.
Pour. I always thought you government types preferred a cold, sterile environment.
Mildred stretched like a lazy cat in the island heat. The balcony offered up a spectacular view of the ocean, and the warm sea breeze blowing across her body was most comforting. Jamais-Vu leaned on his arm and watched her.
Really, Dr. Wyeth, I was hoping for some time away from talking shop. That was one reason why I left Dr. Tanner to his own devices for brunch.
Sorry, the subject just came to mind.
What you really mean is, why did they choose Puerto Rico as a site for Operation Kronos' trawling experiments?
Yes.